Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 223. My name's Turner Sparks.
I am Michael Kaplan.
You can find me at Turner Sparks on Instagram. You can find me at turnersparks.com. Buy my album, Turner Sparks, live from the Friars Club. You can find Kaplan at Cap in America on Instagram, on Twitter, the show today. Oh, and also on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Cap in America across all social media channels.
Across the platforms.
On the show, that's Kaplan's voice right there. On the show today, well, we are welcoming back the great Narek Margaryan. He's a very special place in our heart because it was the first time we went to number one in any country. Last time we had him on, we went to number one in Armenia, talking about Armenia, which we're going to talk about today. And of course, we printed all this merchandise. We have mugs,
we shirts,
have t-shirts. We have a sweatshirt. Kaplan's wearing a sweatshirt. All letting the world know we went to number one in Armenia. We had to actually send one to Narek.
He's a kingmaker. He's the guy who believed in us.
Yo, where's my sweatshirt?
Exactly.
What's your size? Warm.
What it's size are
the,
you?
It's in the mail. The mail takes a while.
I'm an aspiring M.
An aspiring M. That's me too. He's a little snug. But he's a kingmaker. He believed in us. He said, I believe your guys' podcast can go to number one. I can make it happen. Ride with me.
Yeah.
And we went to number one in the charts. We blew up Armenia. I'm sure we're huge celebrities there now. Everyone's talking about us. So we had to do another episode. Welcome home.
So we'll bring him in just a minute.
Let's repeat it by all means.
We're going to repeat it. Narek is driving through Armenian traffic right now. He'll come in just a second. But before we get him in, everyone loves this show. Everyone in Armenia loves this show. We're number one. But the question is, how do you show us you love this show?
Well, first off, if you love the merch for Armenian fans who might not have known that we've made shirts to say number one in Armenia, have a map, the proper map of your country.
The real map.
The real map. The only map accepted. I don't care what the United Nations says. This is the map.
Yeah.
So go to lostinamericapod.com.
Yes.
And you will see a link for the merch. So that's number one.
Buy merchandise. We have mugs. We have t-shirts. We have sweatshirts, all with our face on it, with the Armenian, an outline of the nation of Armenia. And as you said, the real nation, the real map of Armenia.
The only map I accept. And then
also patreon.com. So Kaplan and I do this show for free once a week. Plus, every single Monday, usually, today is Tuesday, we also then do three extra episodes a week of just Kaplan and I talking about, currently, it's a straight-ahead comedy show, but we talk about serious subjects. This week, we're talking about Kaplan's run for city council in New York City. You need to get 900 signatures. That's step one.
And we have one signature. I signed it. I could not get my wife to sign. My wife will not sign it. She does not believe in me.
So only 899 to go. Or Kaplan, my idea is we need to sue the city to get that number down. I think 5 or 10 signatures is
enough. It's discrimination against people who aren't popular. Like,
well,
I don't.
It's a pandemic. You can't go around.
I haven't been vaccinated yet. I'm supposed to be run. They should be making people in the vaccination lines. The second you get in line, you got to sign a signature.
So for $5 a month, you get that show. Go to patreon.com/lostinamerica or go to lostinamericapod.com. The merch, the Patreon show, it's all there. Now, Kaplan, today we're talking to Narek Margaryan about what's going on in Armenia. So they had their war, I guess we call it a war.
A scuffle
with Azerbaijan a few months ago. Didn't end ideally. It didn't.
Well, I thought it ended with us as number one in Armenia. There was more to the story.
It didn't. For us, it was fine. Yeah.
Yes, it ended well for us.
But didn't end great. And so they had to give up a certain land. I think there was the disputed land. A certain part of land had to go back, had to go to Azerbaijan. That was not what we wanted. That's not how we wanted it to end.
We back winners.
In retaliation, the prime minister is blaming the military. The military is blaming the prime minister. And the prime minister, the military wants the, this is what I understand. The military, 40 military members signed a declaration wanting the prime minister to resign.
Yeah.
And the prime minister's response, which is genius, he decided to call it a coup. He goes, this is a coup. They're trying
coup.
As far as I know, a coup is when tanks roll into the city. You arrest the president or the prime minister. You put a gun to his head and you go, get out of here. We never want to see you again. They didn't do that. They just signed a piece of paper.
Yeah. And they basically, it's like when a game ends, you lose a game and it's like, do you blame the coach? Do you blame the general manager? Do you blame the players? It's a big, you know, so of course, like every time I've ever been in a fight, somebody's always broken it up. And I say, I would have won that fight if you didn't stop me. So that's the military guys. You know, they're saying they would have won.
They say, hey, buddy, you lost this war. Time to go.
Yeah.
And he's saying, I don't like a coup.
I don't like a coup. And then he fired the guy. Then he tried to fire the head of the he tried to sack the head of the army. Right.
Well, you fire your assistant coaches. That's
right.
What you do. You say, don't fire me. I'll fire my assistants.
Wait, blame the general. Yeah, blame. Yeah, I'm going to put together a new staff. We're going to hire new coaches. It's not my fault. So he said, I'm going to fire the head of the army and then we'll be fine. Next time we do battle, we'll be good.
And then we're going to get into it later. But then Russia has some comments, the United States, the European Union. Everybody's kind of like, well, this is what I think. This is what I think. Anyway, that's as far as I know. Narek Margaryan, you've been waiting long enough. Welcome to the show. How's our knowledge so far?
It's spotty, guys, but I know the reasons why, and I know why media takes certain things and turns them into headlines, which are basically clickbait. And let's get a couple of things straight. First of all, it wasn't a scuffle; it was a war. It was like a full-fledged classic war. The difference being that these days wars are not fought for years or decades. They are fought for months, let's say. And we had a full-scale war. We had close to 5,000 people dead and lots of people injured. It's all because certain missiles and military drones are now being used. And everyone in the world was following this war because this was like this new generation of drones that was being used against us. So everyone was kind of curious to see how it's going to unfold. And unfortunately, it unfolded pretty badly. Basically, we had nothing to oppose these Turkish drones. They were not Azerbaijani. This is Turkish Bayraktar drones. They fly pretty high up. They are very difficult to shoot down. And that's one of the things that puts sort of a turn in their favor in this war. It was also use of mercenaries from Syria and other countries. It was use of Turkish special forces. So we were very much in a disadvantage, like technically. But to say that this wasn't a war simply because it lasted for 44 days. This is how long wars are going to last now. They are as devastating as wars were a century ago that lasted a year. So that's one thing. It was magnesium to hear that how you said that this wasn't a coup, because that's actually a debate that still is taking place, and we were making fun of it today in our show. And I want to address our prime minister still, Mr. Pashinyan. Even these guys who are not from the previous regime, who do not belong to any political party that's trying to overthrow you, just regular sane people are saying it wasn't a military coup. There were no tanks. Nobody was firing any weapons. People just said you are terrible and you need to go. And they happen to be military. He calls it a coup. Our Minister of Foreign Affairs just today said, of course, it's not a coup. And then the other guy in National Security Secretary, I wouldn't translate, Security Secretary, let's call him. He said, of course, it was a coup. To even think about it is a coup. And a coup is a very straightforward thing. I think it's written in the law what is a coup and what isn't. When we're watching, it's like saying every time you watch a porn, you are trying to rape the people that are in there. So just the act of watching or thinking about it does not equal the crime.
And there's a thought coup. Very big,
yeah. So that's that. But all these things, they are very complicated. And I was looking for a way to tell this to your audience and not to bore them to death. Avoiding lots of last names, difficult Armenian names, last names, political party names. That would be so boring. So I decided to take what's going on in Armenia and extrapolate it on Game of Thrones. You guys still remember Game of Thrones, right? The greatest show ever, except the last season.
I've never seen it, but Kaplan knows it, I think.
Okay.
And our audience definitely knows it.
They are.
I think that's like the common language before Turner returned from whatever planet he was on.
China. In China for 12 years.
He said that doesn't excuse you. That doesn't excuse you. There is piracy in China. You could have torrented it or some
Very
other way.
True.
Anyway, so I was thinking, like, which house from the Game of Thrones should be the current prime ministers? And I hate to say this because this is my second favorite house in Game of Thrones, House Targaryen. Here's the reason why. Because House Targaryen, and we are going to slightly change the dates and mix and different time frames of different houses for creative reasons. Here's why. House Targaryen had this king who was called, referred to as the Mad King. So Mad King, or whatever his name was, the Mad King, anyway.
Mad King.
So the Mad King is the current prime minister because the thing he is announcing, the statements he's making, retracting, and then doing something even more stupid the next day, there is no other explanation to this but madness. This is just pure madness. One day he's saying that everyone should be peaceful. This should not turn into a civil war because the Pash people were outraged. The people wanted to do something when he declared what he signed with Azerbaijan. The next day he called for his supporters to do a citizen's revenge, to go out on the streets and do revenge. And then I think he sobered up and he said, no, everything should be peaceful. Then he said that this Russian's missile exploded. Like, this is like the pride of Russian military, this missile called Iskander. And he announced that this missile exploded for 10%. How can a missile explode for 10%? Nobody in the physics world knew.
So 90% of the missile didn't work.
Yeah, the Russians really got mad with him.
He's blaming his missiles.
And then he said, no, I was wrong. Your missile was fine, Mr. Putin.
Putin does not like to hear his missiles dragged through the mud.
So he's saying he lost the war because the Russian missiles weren't exploding.
They just don't go off. They just land there.
The other thing you guys had wrong is that the military did not say, had we gone longer, we would have won. No. Our military is way much smarter than that. Our military told him to stop the war on the fourth day. on the fourth day,
like they knew they were outmanned,
calculated everything and said, we cannot go on. He didn't do that. The Mad King of the House Targaryen did not do that. Then on October 19th, which is like 24th day of the war, again, the military went on and said, no, no, we cannot win this war. We got to stop it. And Putin went on and got a pretty reasonable deal for us, a perfectly normal deal that would have saved thousands of lives, that would have, we would have ended up with more territory than we did. And then the Mad King Nikol Pashinyan turned it down again.
Even
Putin, he tried not to insult him, but in an interview he said, I was really surprised when he did not accept this offer.
Everyone was like,
what the hell? Why aren't you accepting this offer on the 24th day of the, of this devastating war when your resources are exhausted? The Mad King didn't stop it. So we had what we had by the end. And it keeps on. Like one day he wants to have like his elections to settle this thing. Then he says, no, I'm not going to have elections. Then he said, okay, I'm open to re-election again. He gathered, so the opposition, I will get to the opposition in a moment. The opposition was holding all these rallies for this past four
opposition
months,
being the people decided, who are against, you know, to show against the Mad King?
Several houses. We'll get to
a lot of opposition.
So he said, I will have a rally of my own. And they used every possible administrative resource to pull people to like a square to show that he has still some sort of support. So they called schools, they called hospitals in different regions of Armenia and using pressure on people, forcing them to come. They organized buses and buses. And he ended up with gathering some 15,000 people on this square. And mind you, when he was being elected as prime minister, there was 150,000 people supporting him on that square. So
just 2 years ago, or 2018.
Yeah, 2.5 years ago. So he lost 90%, even with all this administrative muscle that he used. It was just pitiful. Now let's get to the other houses. so there is, he's trying to show everyone that there is no choice but him. So he made second president of Armenia, Robert Kocharyan. He really turned him into his rival because a lot of people have mixed feeling about that president. And he's like more of a convenient rival for Pashinyan. And I would call everyone who supports Robert Kocharyan House Lannister, because Lannisters in Game of Thrones had all the power. They were good managers, like they had experience and stuff. But they were also somewhat, you know, cruel to a certain extent. So
these are the people that support the president, you're saying?
Some of them. That oppose Pashinyan. See,
and can I just ask quickly, who has more power in Armenia, the president or the prime minister?
No. This is not the president. This is the former president.
Oh, the former president.
Armenia's second president, yes. The president has no more power than the queen. So,
It's really the prime minister.
Yeah. So, but the opposition is comprised of all these different factions. And the problem why Pashinyan is surviving for 4 months is not that not enough people hate him. Everyone hates him. They just cannot agree within themselves to what is going to be done. So, So they will call this house House Lannister, and the former president Kocharyan has been criticizing him heavily for years. He's been warning everyone about the war that is going to happen, and now he turned out actually to be right that way. And Pashinyan just, you know, he just tries to divide. He has a criminal case on this president. Open, he's now in court, and that's the way he tries to control him.
So Prime Minister Prime Minister Pashinyan, was it his decision to go to war at this specific time?
No, it wasn't his decision. The war just broke out, but it was his actions that have expedited this war, that actually made this war possible, because we were on our worst possible relationships with Russia that we've ever had. We were not prepared technically. He was reshuffling the military all the time. Like, he was sacking a lot of experienced good generals from the past, and he was bringing basically nobodies to a lot of like really key positions. Like, the guy who was head of our CIA, let's call it the CIA, he basically was 27 years old, so much younger than me. Wow. And he had no experience in that institution whatsoever, and he was trusted with all of this secrets, power, and everything that comes with a post like that. And he was like hugely incompetent. So it was things like this over 2.5 years that sort of piled up and made this war possible, that made Ilham Aliyev, president of Azerbaijan, confident enough to start.
Yes. And so, your prime minister though was always very passionate about the region, correct? Like,
I think looking at it retrospectively, he was faking it. Oh. Him being passionate, because there's earlier articles of him when he was very young as a journalist. He was saying, but do we really need these territories? Aren't they like a burden?
Just to catch everyone up real quick, we should say, go back and listen to our old episode if you're not 100% sure what we're talking about right now. We had Narek on, I don't know what number it was, Kat, maybe you could look it up, but it was about 3 months ago. And we talked about the whole why the war broke out between Azerbaijan and Armenia, what happened, all that kind of stuff. I think that was right as the war was starting. So anyway, go back and listen to that. All right, sorry, keep going.
Yeah. So the other house is House Baratheon, or our Republicans. Republican Party was the party that essentially was the ruling party before Pashinyan made the Velvet Revolution, and he overthrew them to come to power. And it was third president Serge Sarkisian's party. And they are also now on the streets opposing him. They were also, they were actually the first ones to start saying that a war is coming, that this war is inevitable, trying to warn everyone, but nobody was listening to them. Partly because Pashinyan was using his media, fake news and stuff, and all these criminal cases against them to shut them down. And partly because they were to blame for a lot of corruption that either allegedly or factually took place in Armenia. So they didn't have people's trust to the extent that everyone would listen to them when they warned about this.
And as you said, Pashinyan, Prime Minister Pashinyan, came to power.
He was a journalist
in 2018, and the reason why he won, because there was so much corruption in the past in the government.
There wasn't so much corruption per se as there was a perception of corruption. People believed that there is this extreme corruption. Of course, there was corruption, but it was hugely exaggerated. Partly by Pashinyan himself, who was not just a journalist, but an editor of a major newspaper and a website. And it was this old circle of his friends that did own a bunch of other media that sort of hyped this corruption. Because when you look at the real corruption numbers done by serious agencies, international agencies, Freedom House, other indicators, it's actually... we had the best numbers in former Soviet Union. Oh. It wasn't that terrible when experts look at it. But when politicians talk about it, when oppositions talk about it, there were so many things that he promised to uncover the day he came to power that are still not uncovered. He just basically gave up on them. And everyone found out that these things weren't true.
Because they called it a Velvet Revolution,
yeah,
right?
But it was so, basically based on a lot of lies, yeah. Like that president's brother was had a 50% share in every major business in Armenia. Sort of lies like he would turn down cameras that are doing the traffic fines, things like that. So there was so much lie under all that. He said that this second president, the Lannister one, that he had $4 billion stolen, and he still has provided zero evidence of even $1 billion being stolen. So it's all these lies, but people, you know, people believe headlines and interesting stories.
So I just assumed because he's a journalist that he's like, because he had gotten jailed, right, at one point. I just assumed that he was a man of honor here, and apparently not. So
he was considered to be a political prisoner back then. So that's another factor that sort of sanctified him a little bit. Another faction, House Start, would be Armenia's Dashnak Party, the revolutionary party. What was peculiar about them, like, they used to be in coalitions, they used to be in power, but their rating really dropped for the past 4 years or so. And they were considered to be like not having a lot of influence. But this is a party it's the oldest Armenian party. It's about 130 years old. And they're kind of the most militaristic one, let's say, patriotic kind of party. And everyone thought, well, the Dashnaks are no longer like a political force to be dealt with. But on the day that the war broke out, when everyone was trying to figure out, this was the only party that on the very first day organized themselves, and all of them went to fight in the toughest parts of the war. They lost a lot of guys, a lot of great guys during this war. I think the party sort of was, they took older people, also sort of middle-aged people, and they were in the toughest spots, like in hellish regions of this war. And like, they didn't say a thing, they did not advertise this, they just went. And after the war ended, of course, they were among the first to start the sort of street protests against Pashinyan. And that kind of sort of returned them to the map. And why am I calling them Starks is because I think that was a noble thing to do, you know, do not advertising this and just going and participating in the real war, and only then, you know, starting to talk about the issues.
And these are like middle-aged just people, like accountants, secretaries, and all of a sudden they pick up guns and they're fighting in the war.
Yeah. Wow. So lots of them fought in the First Karabakh War, so they were veterans among them, lots of veterans too, and young people too. And now it's their sort of younger guys that are doing all these protests in the streets. They are now, why am I stuck in traffic so much? Because one of the main roads is closed. The opposition put up tents there.
Wow. And this is on the ground reporting.
For those who are listening, you are stuck in traffic right now while you talk to us. So.
Yeah, sort of. This is a huge disadvantage these days driving. But, you know, if this helps to overthrow the Mad King, I'm all for it.
Can I ask quickly, the opposition can just shut down roads in Armenia? How does that work?
When they have the numbers, they can, and that actually happened a few times before, and Pashinyan was one of the people who did it too. So this has turned into like one of the ways. Yeah, people just close the roads. And I think during the war, we shut down one of the highways. Armenians shut down one of the highways in LA, sort of to show their protests and to attract attention. That didn't last for a very long time, but it got a lot of coverage. So yeah, this is one of the ways to fight the regime.
To shut down the
turn people against you in LA. Though.
I know you're shutting down the I-5 in Los Angeles. 405,
yeah.
And there are always different houses. There's former ambassador to Vatican, Mikhail Minassian, who is not in the country because of prosecution by Pashinyan, and he's one of the intellectuals that is doing a lot of uncoverings these days, and he was actually the first one to alert that Pashinyan is going to sign this paper. And nobody believed him. And hours later, Pashinyan did sign this paper with Azerbaijan, and everyone was shocked. So he's getting a lot of inside information and publishing that about corruption of Pashinyan's regime, about their guys doing some shady deals, selling real estate to their friends for one-tenth of the price. But Pashinyan has created this machine of information, and we live in a country, with this is a small country, when we have a scandal every day. A scandal, like a resignation-worthy scandal, is unfolding every day. And when you're living under that dose of information and outrageous things happening, you start to get some tolerance to it.
Yes.
And this tolerance is terrible. So when Mikhail Minasyan posted this corruption scandal, posted about possible ties of chairman of National Assembly to Turkey, well, some people get outraged, and then on the next day, something even more horrible happens, and everyone kind of forgets about that.
Because you can't be outraged every day. You don't have it. Yeah. Humans don't have that ability to just be outraged every single day.
Yeah. So I would call this sort of House Tyrell, you know, a house that's been all there, has all these connections with different factions. And basically what happened, all these houses, all these opposition houses have gathered, and everyone wants Pashinyan's resignation. And so one formula for him to go was they brought back this guy, Vazgen Manukyan. He was Armenia's first prime minister, and he was a defense minister back in the 90s when we just got our independence. So what the opposition was offering is the following formula. Pashinyan resigns. Vazgen Manukyan, who's not a member of any political party, assumes the power for up until 1 year. And then he holds an elections that would be fair. Because after this use of administrative resource to pull all these people to his rally, nobody trusts that Pashinyan can do fair elections.
Okay.
He's saying, interesting, let him resign. Let me be like an interim prime minister for up to a year. And then we'll do elections and we'll see who gets how many votes. And we will settle this turmoil this way. Because this country is in 4 months of turmoil all the time. But Pashinyan doesn't want that. Pashinyan says, well, no, he will also falsify the elections. He's one of the old guards, the older guys, you know, the parties that he overthrew. So he doesn't agree to that. What he agrees to is to resign and have his party organize the elections in Armenia. And sort of hopefully he thinks he can get enough power to become prime minister again, which nobody thinks is true.
He thinks he'll resign, but then he'll run again.
He'll have new snap elections.
That's the audacity that this guy has. This is this unbelievable self-loathing. That's the wrong word. Self-importance, self-determinedness, that he's such a great guy and everybody in the country loves him. He was staging this outbursts of people loving him. He was traveling to one of Armenia's regions, and like these fake groups of people were stopping him, his cars on the way, and saying, oh, you are so great, do this,
actors?
Put everyone in jail. They weren't actors, but some of them were relatives of people from his party. They all were tied to this. And this was so stupid, but people somehow believe this stuff, and this is very frustrating because this is not taking anywhere. It's obvious that he has to go. It's obvious that we need a fresh start. And it's also obvious that we cannot trust him with organizing elections. I wouldn't trust him organizing a bar mitzvah or something, let alone elections.
I mean, bar mitzvah is very stressful, I can tell you. Is he gotta get the little hot dogs right? But when would he next be? When would elections be normally? If he didn't do anything
in 2 years.
In 2 years.
That's a long 2 years.
No,
that's a long time. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
that's a lot of. That's more Pashinyan than anyone can handle.
That's more than him. So I want to get to what the deal that he signed actually was that ended the war. But before that, we have a sponsor.
Yes.
And you guys are all going to be excited to hear this. So as you know, everyone knows, for $20 a month, you can sponsor this podcast and we will read your advertisement whatever you want us to say. Sam Michael, a Patreon subscriber. So that's on patreon.com/lostinamerica. Sam Michael, a Patreon subscriber. He is supposed to get a number one in Armenia t-shirt. He is in China right now. He said, don't give me the t-shirt. I don't need the t-shirt. Just give me an ad on the podcast. So we said, not a problem. Sam Michael is the, I believe he's the owner of AtmosAir.com, the global solution for healthy air, Kaplan.
Yeah, AtmosAir offers the only solution on the market that continuously measures and smartly purifies indoor environments while reducing energy emissions and usage.
So this is an air purifier company.
It's an air purifier company that basically 99% effective against coronavirus. So
I can't wait to breathe that air.
Yes, it's the best air.
Sam Michael sells the best air on the market.
He figured out a way to his purifiers attack the coronavirus, destroy them, strangle them out. I don't know what the...
How is air making the... How does it get rid of coronavirus? Oh, well, it filters
it out. Yeah, it doesn't... Yeah, it's not a vaccine.
99.9...
Just while you're in the room, it's not a... Yeah, you don't take it with you.
99.92%. I know, you know, there's a big Armenian population in Los Angeles, and I don't know about coronavirus down there, but I know that the LA air quality is not fantastic.
Not great.
So if you're listening to this, atmosair.com.
And they give you, they give you one of those dashboards you have, which shows you, have you ever seen one of those that tells you the quality of the air?
They just give us air. They just give us air and say, breathe it. Nobody's going to give you data on air.
You got to have your data.
I have zero data on air.
You guys are stuck in the past.
It's a great new measure. We love measurements in this world, like in the modern world. I measure my heart rate, exactly. I was going to say, we love to measure our steps. We love to measure our heart rate. But that's so last year. Now you measure your air. You walk into a room, you look at the wall, you see the air measurements. And if it's above 560 BTUs or whatever, you say, I'm out of here. Get yourself an AtmosAir because it'll tell you.
You know what, Kaplan? Shut up and take my money. I want the purifier.
Done.
He wants it. Look at that. Narek, that's going to be your party. That's your house. That's your Game of Thrones house. You can run for prime minister based off the idea that everyone gets
better air for the nation.
Best air starting to 2021. That'll be my slogan.
Those Azerbaijan assholes do not have shit air. You're going to have the best air.
We'll build like a wall so they don't get our air.
They don't get any of your air. No, exactly.
Like a dome.
We
the whole country a dome.
We checked with Sam Michael. He said this is available in every country in the world except Azerbaijan.
Except Azerbaijan. Ooh. He's doing a boycott.
He's not selling his air to them.
Yeah.
Now imagine your sponsor had like a really good market deal on that market.
Yeah, we actually didn't double check with him, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say.
Yeah, and it also reduces your energy consumption 4 to 20% guaranteed. So that's a nice guarantee.
You're saving money.
Save money.
Can't afford not to.
More efficient, and that's the way to do it.
AtmosAir.com. Thank you, Sam Michael. You can get your advertisement on this show, patreon.com/lostinamerica for $20 a
month. And AtmosAir, as a city councilman, I will be supporting them as well now. I'll bring
Do you accept Armenian money?
We do. Who's that guy?
Yeah, okay.
It's got an Armenian money train. I love it.
This is Charens. He's a famous writer.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
we put writers on walls there. I love
and
that.
It's a thousand. And it equals $1,000.
Nice. Not done.
No, how much does it equal? Yeah.
So
we should say, I looked it up, by the way. It was episode 201 was when we did our last, when we last spoke about Armenia.
Oh, good. So everyone go back and listen to
episode. And you'll be happy to.
Can I make a quick remark about air? This is still about air.
Oh, yes. Keep talking about air.
So before Michael came up with this idea of measuring and purifying air, decades before that, Armenians were selling air in the market. Some guy came up with a brilliant idea. There were like this round, tiny cans, and inside these cans was air. So the Armenians from LA, when they traveled here, they would buy this as a souvenir and take him to their friends, saying, "This is an air from Armenia. You can sort of open it and
breathe the air."
It's a real thing, and it's still on the market. Like up to today, you can still see this, like in a flea market, because people are selling.
What's
the?
Is it heal you or something? Is it like better?
No, it's just Armenia. Oh. If you're homesick,
smell.
You can just smell air from Armenia.
This guy's a genius.
Yeah, Atmosphere should get on that too. They should start.
He was selling air. Can you imagine that?
Brilliant.
That's great entrepreneurship.
It's like the Pet Rock guy.
There's another funny story that happened. Remember when Kanye and Kim Kardashian came to Armenia?
Yes.
So Kanye did a small concert at a place that's called Swan Lake. And I was there. We were all sort of around this lake, and Kanye was doing basically all of his hit songs. And during the song called Stronger, he jumped into the Swan Lake. He got all wet, and then a bunch of people also jumped into the lake, sort of trying to touch Kanye and stuff. And then police had to intervene. They quickly took him, and I think his microphone malfunctioned because it got wet. So that's when the show stopped. It lasted for like 30 minutes, but it was like awesome. So the day after that, some guy goes to eBay and sells a packet of water, like
the catch Kanye
from the Swan Lake for $700.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
wait, are these 700 Armenian dollars with the writer on it?
No. American dollars? Not the crap that I was showing you. Real one.
Well, how angry were you guys that Kanye didn't win the presidency? Because that would have been, you guys would have won that war if he was our president.
the comedian in me really wanted for him to run. And I have no doubt that he would have won. But the human in me said, like, remember we had this conversation before Trump was running? We said it would be so funny. And then he won.
Yeah,
and then
funny.
The whole world was in danger. And, like, let's keep it to the people. Right.
Keep it to the professionals.
Joe Biden's not jumping in any lake. He would probably die
Joe
from pneumonia.
Biden. Yeah.
So let's keep that red button, you know, like, nicely stacked somewhere, hidden somewhere.
Yes. Okay, I want to get back to this. So we've talked about everyone wants Prime Minister Pashinyan out because he signed this terrible deal to end the war. What was the deal he signed? What was the details of it?
The deal he signed was he gave Azerbaijan all the territories that they ever wanted.
Oh.
That's one. He gave them an Armenian town of Hadrut, which the Azerbaijani never wanted. He just gave it to them.
Just threw it in.
He gave him and said, like, catastrophically, he gave them a town of Shushi, which was not even disputed territory. Why is the Azerbaijani simply had a huge, like, the biggest Azerbaijani population ever in Karabakh was in that town. So all they wanted was to have access to that town. Nobody was disputing the territory. They just wanted to return some of their people to that land. And okay, you wouldn't assume that in a town that is under Armenian control, not many Azerbaijanis would volunteer to go and live, right? So, and this was actually one of the options that Putin offered him, like, back when it was like day 25, 24 of the war. But now he let them sort of come and take this town entirely. And the conquest of this town of Shushi, the takeover of this town, is very disputed these days because there's a lot of mysteries surrounding. Basically, it's on a hill. Like, it was like impossible to take. And it was given basically without a fight. So that's... everyone wants this to be investigated and answers. We need answers on how could that ever happen, because it's on a high ground, and basically the remaining part of Karabakh is now under serious threat when the Azeris have all that territory, and especially Shushi, because, like, if you view from Shushi, you can see Stepanakert. It's like,
yeah,
you can see it.
And
it's like 15 kilometers away or something.
And what happens to the people? Like, if you're living there and then all of a sudden your land belongs to a different country, what do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people, during the war, a lot of people were evacuated to Armenia. A lot of people have just literally lost their homes. A lot of people, those who lived in the part that is still controlled by Armenia, are returning. And there are still this huge portion of people that just lost all their possessions, lost everything they had. And this, and like another thing that keeps aggravating everyone is he still is giving land away after it was signed up. That the document that was signed, it says everyone stays on the ground that they are in, but then as they started sort of using some kind of maps that not everyone agrees with. So we had situations when the Azeri soldiers came to a village in Armenia and said, well, you can stay here, but these 10 houses are now territory of Azerbaijan. So can you imagine that? So 10 or like 6 houses from that village, people had to, you know, just leave whatever they worked for their entire lives, because Pashinyan did not talk over these details. It was hastily signed.
Yeah, that sounds like a complete disaster.
So- yeah, that's a disaster. Like look at it from like a managerial level. How can you sign a document that basically has no details in it? It's open to interpretation. It's open to violation and stuff to an unprecedented extent. And, you know, and he still stays in power.
So why not? Because I did read something that he still has some, like if there was an election, his popularity, he might not be popular, but also there's not any other opposition party that's more popular. Is that correct?
Yeah. Remember I told you that all these houses, they yes. don't have like one unified candidate? Like yes. you would say that the XXX prime minister would be that one unified candidate, but even among them, like some of the parties are now saying, well, if there are elections, we probably will participate, sort of to have both ends. So there's unclarity there, and there isn't like a one like really good candidate, say is if not Pashinyan, it's this guy, sort of. That's why he sort of thrives on that.
And that is that were, why he wants to call, if he calls an election now, he might win, right?
Well, he won't win. There have been polls with varying results. So at the least, he's getting something like 2%, and at the best, he's getting 30%, which none of these is like a win.
2 to 30, that's a big range.
Yeah.
Polling.
Yeah, and 30, like whenever you get like this, anytime in the history of Armenia, when you get someone, an incumbent, during an incumbent president, when there are polls, people who work for state institutions, they always tend to say, yeah, I will vote for whoever is in power.
Yeah.
And then they don't. And basically, imagine that if this poll is done among people who work for state institutions, they all would have lied in the poll because they don't know who is organizing this poll.
I see.
And it's just out of question to think that people will elect a president who took a prime minister, a party that has done nothing but lying, not just about the war, but generally. Of all the promises that he made, not single one was really accomplished, and many of them were accomplished in an opposite way. Like if he promised one thing, he did the exact opposite of what he promised. And there's so many examples of that. So, and there are people who lost family members, lots of people. If we have 5,000 dead soldiers, imagine this is basically 5,000 families. This is like closer families. This is hundreds of thousands of people we're talking about who will under no circumstance ever vote for this guy.
Yeah.
So
what was
for him to even campaign would be impossible. Like, how do you imagine him campaigning, going door to door? His party saying, you know, you should vote for us because we lost the war. And also, like, all these things aside, history wise, the rulers, presidents, kings, or whatever hell you want. The one who loses war leaves, resigns.
Okay, that was my
question. In that war. I don't know.
Yeah, if you That's lose a happens. War, you're out.
I mean, Lyndon Johnson didn't run again during Vietnam here because
you know, in modern history, who was the only example who lost a war and stayed in power? Can you guess?
Who?
It's a name you all know very well in America.
Saddam Hussein. The first time around.
Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
He was the only one who pulled it out.
Well, they didn't hold snap elections, or he, you know.
Yeah, but that didn't end too well for him.
It didn't help, but
ended in a spider hole.
Yeah.
And that usually doesn't end well when you do this. So, like,
what did when the generals came to him and said on day 4, this isn't going well, and on day 20, what did he say back? He said, no, I believe in you, or what was his rationale for not listening then? Or he just...
Well, you could imagine this wasn't done publicly.
Right,
so
right.
These were closed discussions. I don't know what the hell the discussion was. The fact is that he went on.
Can I ask his strategy for calling it a coup? Is that so that the rest of the world will think he's trying to trick the European Union and Russia and the United States into thinking that it's a coup or what?
I don't know. All the military said you should resign because you are doing a shitty job. That's all the military said. And all the generals signed, with the exception of probably a few people, everyone signed it. And he just goes on. That's his talent. That's his magic. Like, no matter what happens, he just toils on. And you know who is the only other country, two countries that also called it a coup?
Who's that?
You're very damn right, damn good at making guesses, so take a guess. Two countries immediately called it a coup after he called it a coup. Name those two
Russia?
Countries. No.
No.
I don't know who supports him. I guess Turkey?
Oh, Turkey.
Turkey?
Yes. Because he's a loser, because they know they can beat him, right?
Yeah. And Azerbaijan.
And Azerbaijan.
Oh, Azerbaijan. Yeah,
of course. And they want him in power.
And
he's a fun negotiating partner.
And the Russians made a statement not calling the coup. And then right after it, Pashinyan said, see, the Russians are on our side. And then the Russians had to make another statement to say, no, we're not calling a coup. We're not taking any sides. They had to clarify this. And after that, the United States Embassy, probably having seen what happened with the Russian statement, said, clearly put it in the statement, we do not consider this to be a military coup.
Yes.
The exact wording. So it's not open to his imagination.
And if he didn't fire the chief or attempt to fire the chief of the army, would this have blown up this way or this... Or just
This all falls into the Mad King concept. So when he said that the Russian missile, the pride of Russian military, exploded for 10%, some journalist called this headquarters chairman's deputy, not him so far. They called his deputy to ask, is it possible for a missile to explode in 10%? And this guy laughed.
Yeah, because it's ridiculous.
He was laughing. And the journalist said that when we called this guy, he was laughing. On the next day, Pashinyan fires him.
Yeah.
So, and that was like the spark when already his boss, the chairman of the headquarters, said, like, you cannot go on like this. And then what he does, he tries to fire him.
Just keep firing people.
Yeah. But for laughing at him.
Yeah. It's very Trump-like, you know.
So,
yeah, exactly Trump-like. And remember,
international-wise, Turkey, the U.S., and the EU said that a democratically elected leader should not be thrown out by the military. But again, this isn't them throwing him out. This is them asking him to leave. Two very different things. But then I noticed just very recently the Azerbaijan president or prime minister, the head of Azerbaijan, said he wants to open a dialogue now with Armenia and move on. Do you think he sees this?
No.
Quite
the contrary. What he's saying, he now wants he wants even more land, and he's been making this statement for the past 4 months. He wants a part of our land in the south to get roads to Iran, which is like the most important thing that he wants, and which is also not in these papers, but everyone now is alerted that Pashinyan might give that to them too, and that would be devastating to give them the road to Iran, and that would change the whole outlook.
Your country separates Azerbaijan from Iran. Iran's on one border, correct?
Yeah, so they desperately want this road, and it would change sort of the whole play field of this region. And actually nobody wants them to have this road, and within the grief to give them that road. Since he's giving away parts of villages, small passes here and there, everybody is just afraid he will do that. So before he does that, let's have him resign. And actually nobody said that he's a democratically elected president, prime minister, and that he shouldn't be thrown away. Like, if you have grounds for resignations, that's a resignation. That's a perfectly democratic way of
Think what they said was that a democratically elected leader should not be, there shouldn't be a coup, but that was that, but
there
this
shouldn't
isn't a coup.
Be a coup period, but
we're against coups, exactly.
Yeah, but, you shouldn't create a situation when a coup is possible, because when
not
you do,
Myanmar, right? Myanmar has a coup.
But even when you do, it means you're a shitty manager. It tells about you is that you cannot control the situation in a country. And if you can't, well, a coup is bad, but you're also bad.
Yeah, you're bad at your job.
Yeah. And you're bad as if you're a president or a prime minister of a country, you don't want to be, when you're fighting with the military, you don't want it to be because they're showing more restraint than you are. Because that, you know, they know that you should be listening to your generals, as they say.
The military has done nothing but statements. And actually, a lot of people in the opposition consider the military's action to be too soft.
Yeah.
And then sort of the president said that it's kind of unconstitutional. He said something, but he sort of tried to play Switzerland, not to be on everyone's side. But what ended up is that person who criticized Pashinyan is gone now. Yeah. And he's disputing it in court. But he's not acting. And actually, when you have just come out of war, changing military leadership is like, it's one of the things that led to the war. Remember I said he was changing generals all the time, and now he's trying to do it over again.
Put a 27-year-old in charge of the CIA.
Yeah, so this 27-year-old guy, he got appointed to a bunch of posts. Like, he was in this state control commission. Then he was head of CIA. Now he's on some other investigative jobs, and everyone's making fun that he has the best resume in Armenia. And then whoever gets fired, everyone's saying, oh, he'll probably appoint that guy.
Yeah. So what do you think, just to close it out here, what do you think, do you think a resignation's coming soon?
It's already too late, but I hope it's coming. What I hope is this doesn't lead to civil clashes.
Yeah.
Which so far have not happened, and I just hope we can keep it civilized, keep it democratic this way. That's the number one thing to avoid. But every day he stays in power is basically very tangible damage that he's causing this country, its reputation, and our positions negotiating, because he says something and then a lot of professionals have to refute this, explain this, justify what he said. And this is, he's ruining our reputation worldwide. And he cannot negotiate with Aliyev because he's the one who lost. He turned into a song in Azerbaijan. He's actually Azerbaijan's hero.
Oh,
they wrote a
single
song about
their number one?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And whenever there's a, on YouTube, whenever there's an opposition rally, you can see all these Azeri bots and trolls saying, no, the Pashinyan has to stay. He's the best leader Armenia's ever had. So
it's like when a team has a bad coach who you hate, you're like, don't fire that coach. I love that coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the war is what changed it. Like, because you said there was a lot of corruption before that, but I guess a lot of people didn't see it or didn't care as much. You think the popular
like one thing that everyone refuses to see, there's a lot of corruption now.
Yeah.
And that's a fact that's been proven so many times over and over. But
every country, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, that's the one thing he promised to eliminate. And he's creating this whirlwind of headlines and scandals that happen every day. Like, one day we lost a Boeing and it turned out to be in Iran. which actually can get us into sanctions from the United States because you're not supposed to give Boeing airplanes to
Iran.
You lost an airplane in Iran?
Like, I'm describing you one Monday. In just one Monday, we lost a plane and we were in Dubai for a military exhibition where our samples, our exhibits did not arrive. We only had brochures to give out while everyone else was displaying. This was just one freaking day. And last Thursday, like this last Thursday, what was the thing? Even I am forgetting. Last Thursday, we got someone hacked, supposedly hacked an email of a guy who's prosecuting one of the old oligarchs. And he found some emails from Prime Minister's office where they were doing track changes, editing of the accusation. They were actually changing the words in the accusation for this person. It was like direct interference from Prime Minister's office, a very specific person. So that alone, like forget everything else, that alone is a cause for immediate resignation of the entire government. But it's Friday then.
Yeah.
Let's move on. It's a weekend.
And then it's Monday.
I know the feeling well. When you have a scandal every day, something that happened last week feels like 100 years ago.
That's what Trump was doing, right?
Yeah.
And he and Trump had so much in common. Like they're both populists. They were classic populists who came to power despite of all odds. And they turned out to be exactly what.
So he's the kind of journalist Trump would like.
I don't know if I mentioned this. Like about 4 years ago, my colleague and I, we wrote a movie, which was about a journalist who becomes president. And everything in that movie came true. A journalist did become president. We had scenes in the movie that exactly were performed by Pashinyan. There was a scene when the president was riding a bicycle to show everyone how popular he is. And then Pashinyan was riding a bicycle. Like things happened like word for word, which I'm shocked to see is everyone watched this movie to the midpoint, I guess, because
he's stealing your material.
They only saw the fun and games part of this movie. They didn't see the midpoint and what happens after when the guy is obviously incompetent.
It didn't. Your movie did not end in a war.
Did what?
Did your movie end in a war with Azerbaijan?
No. It was a family comedy. We didn't have war, but we
ended in a plague.
We had corruption. We had the eco crisis, which also Pashinyan also had. So lots of things.
What's the name of this movie for anyone?
Head of State.
Head of State.
And check out Arm Comedy. We should have said that earlier, but on YouTube, Narek Margarian hosts Arm Comedy. The biggest comedian in Armenia. You put us to number one. You put us on the map in Armenia and in the United States. So thank you very much. Thank you for doing this. And we always love having you on the show, man. And this
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. I hope this happens. The number one things happens again. I hope your show goes on to become the biggest show on iTunes. And what was this Chicago Bulls saying? Repeat the three-peats?
Yes. This is a repeat. We're guaranteed a three-peat. We want a three-peat.
We'll agree to do another one.
Sounds good.
We're still on our media side.
I really appreciate the map. Really appreciate the true, correct map.
Show this
of
to
Armenia
your
that you have.
To people running. Yeah.
We should also say that we had our designer design these mugs and design the logo. And then before we went and printed it, I sent it to you. And remember, you helped and you said, move the border a little bit. And I said, no problem. That's why we asked. So, of course. Yeah.
And then Pashinyan interviewed.
Ruined
so your
it.
Designer was right.
We got some hate mail last time by people who said I kept botching Azerbaijan's capital. I couldn't say it right.
Baku.
I don't acknowledge it. I won't say it right this episode.
Okay.
I don't.
All right.
That's the episode.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Love you, Narek. Thank you very much, Kaplan. That's it from Narek's traffic jam, Kaplan.
Yeah, the opposition is keeping him in traffic, so I'm gonna.
No, I'm home. I'm finished driving.
He's home. He's down front. Yeah. You got a good parking spot.
I just got home.
What should we do?
Then it's time to get lost.
Get lost.
Get lost.
Sit there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.